Welcome to Accounting High.
The idea came from a ski trip. We're at the top of a ski run. Skis are over the edge, about ready to drop into this big bowl. And what people say up on the top of the mountain is, hey, send it. Just send it. And so when you send it, like as soon as you drop in, you're all in. You're committed to that line that you're taking. And if you're not committed to it, you're going to fall and roll down the hill. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, man, that resonates with me. And I think it'll resonate with others.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountancy way back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same. Raleigh is the spot where I edutain, like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast. Next one we drop, cause you know we don't stop. It's 24/7 on the Accounting High Live. TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk. Cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod, cause the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
Introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Roman.
We're gonna have a problem here.
Class is in session. I'm gonna go full send today. We are all gonna go full send. Students, you're in for a treat. We've got the Roman Villard on. It's Villard, right? I'm pronouncing the V. Veard or Villard?
In French, it's Villard.
I'm going to say that. I'm going to try to remember how to say it. I always say Villard because that's how it's spelled. I just say Roman, though, for most of the time, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. Roman, you're here. You made it to Accounting High.
Full circle, man. Full circle. This is awesome.
I'm so glad you're here today. We're going to have a great discussion. We're going to talk about community. We're going to talk about building a brand. Right now, we're at Accounting High. This is sophomore year. And again, you've arrived. So I'm going to tell the audience and the students how we met, and I want you to kind of tell the story, but I'm going to just say it was Sons of CPAs days. This was back in the middle school years. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit the backstory?
Boy, yeah. So this was late 21. I was in Venture Atlanta. And I ran into a connection at Naples Technology Ventures that referred me to start listening to and absorb content from Ryan Lozanis. And so I started picking up some of that stuff. And one of his posts, a blog post, had a list of podcasts that he recommended for accountants. And one of those was Sons of CPAs. You know, there's five or six on the list. One was Sons of CPAs. And so I started listening to the early podcast and was like, man, there's something different about this. The vibe, the authenticity, the rawness of the conversations. And so I just started listening. And in the back of my mind, started ideating around what it could look like to instill some of these things you were talking about in the firm that I was at. And then, to make a long story shorter, to ultimately build my own firm. And then you and I connected when I just reached out to you on LinkedIn. And,
dude, this is right when you're starting to build your firm. You're starting to build Full Send. You didn't have hats yet. I'm pretty sure you had a name. You had the idea that what it was going to be at that stage. But that was exciting. That was like, this is what I'm doing this for. I kind of realized too, like you were the vision of what I was hoping to achieve at that point. Like I got this guy reaching out saying he's got a backwards hat on. He's got long hair. He's wearing a hoodie or something similar to what I had on when we met and we were talking. And you said it was resonating with you. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll keep doing this then. You know, it was one of those stages where I didn't know if I was going to keep doing the show.
Well, and all I wanted to do is reach out and just say thanks. Like, man, what you're doing is impacting people. And these conversations people hear and get inspired by. And so all I wanted to do was just send you a note to say like, hey, dude, thanks. Like, really appreciate it. You've been inspirational to my journey at that point in time and still today.
Well, feelings mutual. I've continued to be inspired by what you do and what you're doing online. And that's kind of the stuff we're going to talk about too. Because you were, during that conversation, you were talking about posting on LinkedIn and you were referencing some other people that you were, you introduced me to Paul Barnhurst at the time too. Mm-hmm. and said he's consistent, he's posting every day, and you were going to start doing that. And that was 2021. You're still posting pretty much every day since then. And you've been very consistently building your brand. You're doing it just like I'm building this Accounting High. Like we said, we met during the Sons of CPAs days, but I'm building a new brand now too. And it's fun. It's exciting. You mentioned you were at a firm to start with, right? So tell us a little bit of the backstory too, because I always like to say, how'd you get into accounting, into the accounting space? So that's sort of where we're at.
Sure. So I can go back to high school. Seems only appropriate when I go back to high school. So my dad is an entrepreneur of 30 plus years. And so I got to grow up watching him build businesses, and it wasn't always easy. It wasn't rainbows and butterflies all the time, but I had that kind of in the back of my head of what entrepreneurship is like. Fast forward to college, I was a finance major, and my senior year, my accounting professor was like, hey, you know, we're talking about careers. And he's like, hey, if you do finance, you can go have a great career in finance. If you do accounting, you can do anything. And I sat back and I thought about that. And I was like, gosh, this guy's right. Like every single business on the planet needs accounting. And so I switched my major senior year, and then proceeded to work in public accounting for 8 years, and then three other firms in various capacities. But that's kind of where I got my launch.
Accounting equals anything. That was like the mind that you had. You saw it as versatile. You could pretty much do anything. It's the language of business.
It is. It's what Warren Buffett says. And it's true. I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted optionality.
Mm-hmm. So you ended up in public, of all things. In most cases, a lot of people would say that's a pretty boring path. Your dad was an entrepreneur. You could have done anything, and you go into public accounting. I'm kidding. Like, we're all in public accounting on this show and stuff, but tell me why that? What was it? What was the drive there? What was the draw?
Yeah. So getting into public, I had two opportunities. One, to go full-time EY in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and my primary client base would be oil and gas. I was like, I do not want to do oil and gas accounting. I don't want to work on Exxon's audit for the next 6 years. The other opportunity was in a regional firm in Dallas, on their audit team. And what I didn't know at the time is the exposure that I would get from an audit from beginning to end, from my very first year onward, and the exposure to multiple businesses and working with the regional firm was something that ultimately provided to be a ton of value. But I didn't know what I wanted to do. And in college, they're like, hey, audit or tax, public accounting, that's the only path for accountants. And it just felt like I had to do it.
Rite of passage, maybe, for a lot of us. Yeah. So you ended up in public, and part of this story that you've already revealed that I love is you were at a firm and then branched out to go start out on your own, because it's so much easier to do that now with all the resources we have.
It is, but it took 12 plus years to get to the point to feel comfortable to do that. And I think a large part of that was just a skill set built in sales and business development that I wouldn't have had I stayed in public.
Ah, so how did you get that? How did you get that experience? People, this is the experience that you get really in understanding people, understanding humans' motivations and what drives us, and being able to have conversations with anybody. That's not a skill set that we develop a lot as accountants.
No, it's not. It's not. You're not trained that in public. And ultimately, it's not about developing a sales skill. It's about communication. But when I left public in 2018, I put in about 8 years, and I had an opportunity to help start a Denver office for a Dallas-based consultancy. And I applied for an accounting manager consultant role. And they said, hey, have you thought about business development? I was like, absolutely not. And they ultimately offered me a role with a $0 base salary and 100% commission pay. And I talked to my wife about it, and we said, hey, it's worth giving it a shot, see what happens. And then I took that role and hired an executive sales coach as my first move. So I was literally losing money.
How long was your hair then?
Oh, it was short. It was short. I identify as a different person today.
Dope. All right. Now we can get into that too, because I do as well. But yours is lengthy. You're getting to the point where you might have to get your first cut.
Oh, is I've cut right? it. Four times since I grew it out past shoulder length. Yeah.
Okay. When did you start growing your hair? Now we're going to get into the hair conversation.
Yeah. So the hair. So my son is 2.5 years old, and the last time I had a short was probably several months before he was born. So for the last 2.5, 3 years, it's been growing and long.
A lot of this stuff kind of happens by accident, but it's driven based on where you want to go, where you see the direction of you as a professional or in life. And I guess you've always identified as an entrepreneur, but getting that full, was that a not yet, not really?
I wouldn't say that I've always identified as an entrepreneur. I've always really enjoyed building things, whether that's building a new office in Denver or joining a new firm as a business development person as their first BD hire. You know, I enjoyed creating new outcomes for whoever I was working with and then ultimately myself. But I never had that mindset of entrepreneurship until I was hearing about other folks that had done it in our space and opportunities still existing there.
What was the first thing you built that you're proud of still today that you realized you were building something?
So I would go back to my first experience in public accounting, where there wasn't a rigorous training process for new hires, a robust recruiting platform for university hires. And so I helped support build out the recruiting engine at my alma mater, and then ultimately helping train those individuals in the firm. And that was my first 3 years of public accounting. And the beauty of that regional firm was that they enabled me to do that as an audit associate. And so I'm really proud of the people that we brought into that firm and the environment that we were able to create for them. Like, it was awesome. And I still am friends with a lot of those people we recruited today.
Wow. That shows a lot of initiative or willingness to grow too. As an employee, did you ask for that responsibility or did they bring that forward to you?
I had seen a few others dabbling in it and I was like, how are they getting opportunities to do stuff like this? And so ultimately I just have a conversation with my partner, my mentor, and say, hey, this is something I'd really enjoy doing. And doors open up when you put yourself out there a little bit.
Yeah. Putting yourself out there and opening doors. So that's something that you are doing a lot of today out there across the board, I'm noticing. And I love it because I identify with it. Like, we're very similar in a lot of ways. And I think you saw that in the beginning. That's why you liked the show, or it's why you reached out, because putting yourself out there is hard for a lot of people. And I didn't realize that's actually a skill that you can almost, I mean, I would say that I was born with it, because naturally I incline toward wanting to get to know everybody or meet everybody in the room. And you naturally become a connector along the way as you're introduced to a lot of different groups, because you feel comfortable around most of those. And you can build a community around your interests or your purpose or what you're trying to build. And I believe that's what you're doing with FullSend. And since you've been part of this community.
100%. There are a number of rallying cries in our profession, whether it's the 150-hour CPA rule or the branding and messaging, the pricing, the billable hour. You know, there's a lot of rallying cries that I've noticed. And so I'm just trying to take this ethos of FullSend and what we're doing here and try to spread it out to be able to create, you know, that ripple effect on the industry and not just create my own little environment where I can thrive, but rather extend that to others.
Such a cool brand. I think of it as a flex, like coming up, taking a name that's used everywhere and making it your own within this space. That takes a lot of, like, you knew that this was a brand that you see everywhere already. So to be able to say, I'm going to do that for my business and own it and not let anybody say that it's taken. Like, that's a hard thing to do. So how did you come up with the name? And when you decided that you were going to have what came first? Was the name while you were still working at another firm, or was it? Tell me the story.
So I never had any intent to build something on my own when I was at my last firm. That came about a month and a half after I had left. And again, my wife and I had a lot of conversation around, is now the right time? Does it make sense? Is this possible to be able to create a living for myself by doing this and support our young family? I had a 1-year-old at the time. You know, she was tremendously supportive in that. And so as soon as we both said, hey, we're going to commit to this journey, no matter how difficult it is, for at least a year, that's when my whiteboard filled up with different names and ideas and thoughts. And, you know, initially I was rallying around this idea of calling it Kayak, because it's the same forward as it is backwards, and I could brand it really well. So I had the branding in the back of my mind. I had the allegory of what founders and entrepreneurs go through in their business. Kayaking, it's a rough road. It can be filled with different pitfalls and rocks.
You're telling
bumps.
A story already with the brand.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I was thinking about it, though, is like I didn't want to build Roman CPA or Vilar CPAs because I didn't want this A to be about me, and I wanted to resonate with a lot of people. And so then I had Full Send, and then I added on Full Send Finance and just circled it. It was like, that's it. That's the ethos. That's the adventure that I want, the spirit that belongs.
Was there
in
another
space.
Full Send that impacted you, or another brand that how was Full Send that you really liked?
So there is another brand that I found after the fact, a Full Send podcast, apparently, and I have no affiliation with that. But I found them after I had already stood up the LLC. But the idea came from a ski trip where, you know, there's a networking event, probably 20, 30 people there. We're at the top of a ski run. Skis are over the edge, about ready to drop into this big bowl. And what people say up on the top of the mountain is, hey, send it. Just send it. And so when you send it, like as soon as you drop in, you're all in. You're committed to that line that you're taking. And if you're not committed to it, you're going to fall and roll down the hill. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, man, that resonates with me. And I think it'll resonate with others.
I'm so glad you told the story of what send it means, because that was going to be a question coming up. Because you say send it, and I think immediately like 100, go all in. Like if I were to use an emoji, I would use the 100 emoji. Like you're fully committed.
Yeah.
There's no turning back at that point. You're just going forward. And you can do that with your life. You can do that with anything. Any decision you make, you can send anything. And that way you're not looking back either. I love that. And I love that part of it too. You can't look back. Once you're going down the hill, with that, you're not going to, you got to go to the lift to get back up.
Yeah. It resonates on a few levels. So like personally, like I'm the type that once I'm committed to something, I'm in, I'm going. And until that course changes and I need to commit to something else, I'm all in. Similarly with our clients, you know, we serve venture capital funded seed through Series B stage companies. Those people are putting a lot on the line. There's a lot of risk in that early stage venture capital backed company. And so they're committed, they're all in. And then when you think about employees, those employees are trying to join an environment that they want to thrive in. And so the way that we use it internally is, what's your full send? And so for some people, that's like our new employee, she loves plants and loves gardening, and her full send is gardening. And like that brings me so much joy that brings her joy, that we want her to be able to lean into that as much as possible in a job where she's doing accounting.
Building a brand, but deciding to go full send. So at what point did you make that decision that you were going to go full send? With your firm?
Yeah. So that was Memorial Day of 2022. So my wife and I went on a trip out to California. We're sitting on the balcony overlooking the ocean, and we're just having a conversation like, hey, if you're okay with me committing to this, knowing that I'm not going to pay myself, knowing that it could be a difficult road, then on Monday or Tuesday after Memorial Day, I'll start working on it. And so that was the point in time where it was a joint decision. It's not just me saying, hey, I'm going to go do this. It's my wife saying, hey, let's go. You go full send. Once you're in, you're in. So it was Memorial Day of last year that I really started leaning into it.
Okay. Now I'm going to have to get into how were you able to tell your, like, how were you able to quit? Like, quitting a job is hard too. And telling the coworkers and telling your team, because I'm sure that, how long were you there before?
So I was at my previous firm almost 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. So at that point, yeah, how do you tell everybody that you're leaving? Because that's a hard thing for some people to do.
So I'd actually left about a month prior.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so it was one of those situations where like we had built an amazing fractional CFO group, grown it significantly during COVID. Trying to figure out how to do business development during COVID was challenging. You know, it had its ups and downs, but ultimately, you know, the longer term vision of where they wanted to go and using technology and things didn't align with some of the ways that I wanted to help grow the practice. And ultimately, it just made more sense for me to depart and look for a role in venture capital or venture debt or other transaction services groups. And that was the point in time in which I was starting to think about doing my own thing, was after I had already left.
Okay. So you're starting out. Did you have any clients in this first round? You had nothing. You had just this idea. So tell me about getting your first client.
Yeah. So I spent from June 1st or whatever the day was after Memorial Day last year until about end of July. So about 2 months fully focused on internal operations. And by that, I mean like,
Oh man. Yeah, you've been so patient about this. I got to say too, from the get-go, from when we started talking, you said how you were thinking about it and, you know, like this plan. And then I asked, do you want to be on the show? And you're like, I'm going to wait till I'm ready. You're ready now. That's why I said you've arrived. You're here, just for the context for the listeners. But even just that run up to get your first client, because a lot of people will say yes to everything and anything that comes their way and anything that they could just start making money on. You went into this with intention. Like, this is who I'm going to work with and I'm going to have this runway. You know, I'm sure you had some finance, something saved for you to know that I can wait to get this first client. Like, but continue. I didn't mean to interrupt the story. It's just the impact of this is,
yeah, that's impact too. I contributed $8,000 into a business checking account. And I don't think I maybe touched a couple hundred of it before I pulled in my first client. Because I did initially all the branding, all the web design. I did everything on my own, as efficient, as scrappy as possible. And so in mid to late July,
but you still have to live. You still have expenses and other things at home that you didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some savings built up. And thankfully, my wife is doing well for herself and was able to float us. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She's a fantastic data scientist and does great work for her firm.
Okay. That helps a lot of this too, that if you had one income, that would be more difficult.
Well, and that's why I go back to saying it was a joint decision, because knowing that she would be supporting us financially, sure, during the time in which it would take to grow, you know, I can't sit here and say, hey, can you just float me for the next year, 2 years? Like, I need to be able to contribute. But that joint decision, that buy-in and that support was invaluable. It's
it affords you patience. That allows you to be patient with all of this. So in context, yeah, it helps, really does. So getting that first client, how did they find you?
Yeah. So I had started participating in an accelerator group in town, just offering like free mentorship to a program. And so I picked up like 1.5 consultant type clients, hourly type stuff, super, super small. And then my first recurring client was on my birthday on August 12th of last year. And that's when I was like, all right, it's go time.
Oh, wow. That's dope too. So you got this from the volunteer group or the place that you were mentoring, and I've got a firm, I'm doing this. And it's sort of like, was it a new business or how did that work?
Yeah. So these companies coming out of the accelerator program are super, super early stage. Maybe they've raised a little bit of capital, but ultimately they haven't put any time and effort into managing their accounting, their financials. And so at first it was just like, I'm an hourly consult just to get QuickBooks stood up, just to get a chart of accounts loaded up for you to teach you how to manage this going forward. And so it wasn't until August where I got that, hey, now I'm going to manage it for you type client.
Hourly consult.
Yeah.
Do you still do hourly stuff?
We do. Most of our work revolves around fixed fee recurring work, but I love that early stage advisory, that strategic support to that type of company. So about 25% of our revenue is hourly today.
Okay. Okay. And that's the way to do it. I mean, is there another way? Everybody talks about the end of hourly.
You know, today it's very, very difficult to fixed fee advisory services, which is what we would quantify as the hourly billing, or maybe it's project work. It's very difficult to put just a firm number on that. And we haven't found a great way to do it, but I would be very interested if somebody's cracked that code.
No, people are working on it, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure our principal could come on and give you a thing or two of talking of it, but practically speaking, it's one of those things that you're productizing it. And I don't want to go down that road, but so let's go back to building something. So you're building this firm, you've got your first client, you're continuing to build your brand, build your clients. Now you have employees too. So tell me about finding your first employer. At what point did you need your first employee?
Yeah, it's funny because my wife in late 22 was like, you need to hire, get somebody on board before you need them. And I kind of heeded that advice because it's like, I don't know, I'm not ready to afford that yet. And so I just threw this cryptic message out on LinkedIn, like, hey, if there's an entrepreneurial accountant out there in the universe that would be interested in having a conversation about building something, reach out to me. I think it was
that's so cool. I probably saw that. I think I did, but like, that's such a cool way of like trying to put the feelers out there to find a partner or somebody.
Yeah, because I didn't have a job description. I didn't know what I needed. I did know that I wanted to execute a top-down hiring approach. I did know that. And so I was looking for somebody.
Explain
more,
what a top-down hiring approach is.
Yeah. So I was looking to hire effectively the upper echelon of type of employee from like a partner, director, manager, senior accountant. If you're using public,
so fill in the top roles.
Philosophy. Yeah. Top roles first, because I knew that if I hired.
Rather than just filling somebody to do the excess work, you're filling right. somebody that could manage the place and let it run without you when you're building something else at some point.
Exactly. I've heard that before somewhere, but ultimately knowing that if I'm hiring accountant level up, then I'm just creating more work for myself. And so that's not how I wanted to go about it. But Stacy Feldman reached out to me on LinkedIn in December, January timeframe. And it took 4 months of conversations before we said, hey, let's do this. And I'm so grateful that she responded to that LinkedIn message, because now she's been here for over 6-7 months. And
you guys are already like six episodes into your show. I keep seeing little clips of that. That's awesome. And she seems like she's a natural in front of the camera and talking too, which is great. That's such a cool way to find somebody of the one of those top levels. I think, you know, anybody should take notice and take that to heart, because those are the roles that most people have a hard time filling, really hard time filling. Everybody needs to find their operations person or somebody that can manage things. And it's typically they wait until they're over 800,000 to over a million till they even think about hiring those roles. So
yeah,
what's your revenue right now? Like, I'm not asking that question because you're still just starting out, but it's not a million, it's not 800,000, and you're hiring manager type level.
Yeah, we'll hit a million next year.
Oh, really? Dope.
That we're on track to. So growth has been steady. It's been really good.
let's talk hard numbers.
All right. But first, when I brought Stacy on board, neither of us had any idea what the role looked like. And it was, her offer letter is comical, but we've defined it and we've honed in on how we operate with one another, how we serve clients, and operationally how we succeed going forward.
But you built everything on trust initially. Yeah. In the beginning, you built it on mutual understanding of expectations and trust, where the written stuff, you got to do it. I'm sure you got to have, like, you know, the job application and all that, but you're not living by that.
We're not. I mean, ultimately, it came down to a gut feeling of, does she carry a full send ethos or not? And through that conversation over the course of four months, I was like, all right, she knows how to send it. And, you know, she'd tell you the same thing, like, she full sends every day. And we've just been having a blast building the last 6 months.
Dope. Yeah. I mean, again, a lot of those things, people find them accidentally or backwards. So what we found, our ethos afterwards, after we've been working for a long time, we found all of those things at our firm, because we had to go back and reflect on what they were. We didn't know what they were because we were just operating. You've defined those pre-clients, pre-start in the firm. You defined what those ethos were in the name and went down, the top down. That's another top down approach. That's like core values, the ethos, you know, that's your mission, your driving force. That's your North Star.
Yeah.
It's who you are.
And we did a lot of refining work post Stacy joining as well. You know, our mission is to elevate financial data, and our core values are good neighbor, ship daily, and service par excellence. And we put a lot of context around that in relation to bringing on new clients, bringing on new employees, how that interfaces with the community. And that's been a driving force for every decision we're making going forward.
That's dope. Yeah. So yeah, so let's get into hard numbers then. So this is your second year in operation. If you started 2022, technically you've already been a full year, right? So you've got your full year numbers for your full send finance.
Full year numbers for 2023?
I guess, whatever your first year was. Give me your...
So from August 12th, when we actually collected our first dollar in revenue, to August 12th of 2024, we were about $367.
Okay.
In total revenue. Most of that was serviced primarily by me, and then Stacy joining in March of this year.
And that's about a healthy time to hire your first person around then, I would think.
Yeah, and we definitely weren't there whenever she came on board in March. There was just that kind of hope and a dream, and also like a lot of planning going into bringing on new clients and scaling that up.
Yeah. Oh, but at this point, things are in motion. Everything is now starting to turn into that machine. You've already got the framework. You've already got the foundation. You're still fueling it with a lot of your time and effort and energy to build it. This is your this is your full-time gig, Full Send, now, besides being a dad.
Yeah, I'll definitely say that it's a grind. It is a grind. There's a lot of time that goes into building something. But for me, that is always going to come secondary to my wife and my kids. And since I started the company, we've had a second child. I've got a 1 month old at home. My boy is 2.5 now. Life is full, man. It is
full. This word full keeps coming up. What's your vision then for where it's going to be? I don't want to define the number of years, but down the road, when you get to the point where you could build something else, when have you finished building this? What's it look like?
So when I think about the ethos, the values, the mission of what we're doing here at Full Send Finance, there's a lot of that that can translate really well across other service lines. And so I've already got in the back of my mind a full org chart and plan of different entities that are serving businesses in a variety of ways, whether it's data, technology, HR, you name it. But there's a long tail plan there. But ultimately, whenever I talk to Stacy and new people joining our company, I say, hey, if you're going to be a top performer here, we want other people in the industry to look at you and say, how are you doing it differently? Why is what you're doing impacting the industry and your employees differently than how it's been done before? And so I want to be in a position to put others on that pedestal to be able to live out their best lives and have fulfillment professionally. And a great example of that is Stacy's on FreshPak now. Like, I was so jazzed that she has got on FreshPak, and to see now this kind of first step of impacting an organization like FreshBooks and what she's doing there, like, oh, I'm so excited for her.
Dope. That's really exciting. Now she gets to meet more people in the profession and expand her networks. Tell me, how is this vision? How do you see this? Is she a partner now in Full Send? Is that okay? How do you structure that?
Yeah, she is a partner. So coming on board with a tranche of equity that will vest over a certain time frame, there are both time-based milestones and then metric-based milestones for vesting. And so kind of worked that in. And I had a lot of conversation with folks that you and I both know really well to help me come up with a good structure.
Yeah.
And we came up with a good plan of attack that we both felt really strong about. And she's on board. And, you know, we're both incentivized in really great ways to build together.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Cause you've got a lot of this from the clients that you work with and your understanding of how a lot of these early stage companies work, that you could apply that to your business in a unique way. Not too many people do this. The only conversation I've ever had with something like this was with Matthew from Acuity, and they were still early stages of trying to figure out what that would even look like.
Mm-hmm. And guess who I talked to when I was bringing on a partner? Matthew and Kenji at Acuity.
Of course you did. Yeah. Well, those are our mutual friends that love doing things differently. And they're the rappers. They're the best rappers alive out here doing it, right? If you're running a practice as rapping, then they're the ones pioneering the way for a lot of people and doing it openly. So I'm sure you learn a lot from their show, Drink While You Think.
Dude, I learned so much from those two. And what's been amazing to me is that they're so open and willing to share and willing to counsel and mentor others. And again, it takes a step to reach out and have that call and to ask those questions, but they've just been so welcoming with open arms to help me think through things that we're building on our end.
Yeah. Yeah. And it always helps to have those people, have those mentors and build that community and build those connections, because everybody helps each other in a lot of ways. Like, doesn't matter what stage you're at when you're doing it, developmentally, like, we all have a lot to learn every stage that we're at.
Yeah. One of the things that I rally around often, and I haven't trademarked or anything, but it's just the phrase, build together, go farther. And it's one of those ethos that I think when you do build in community, when you do build together, when you're open and vulnerable about what you're going through, you will go further. And it's just kind of how I've leaned into especially the community side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's going Full Send too. You know, when you're committed to helping others and going out there and being part of that community, that means you're putting yourself out there, but you're also available for people that need help.
Yeah. Because ultimately, like, I've learned so much from them. And right now, I feel like I'm taking a lot from the accounting community, because I've just absorbed so much information from our friends that I know I need to start giving back at some point. But man, it is an invaluable lifelong resource to be able to have community that you can you can reach out to, and that'll support you and that'll help you through tough times or help you think through difficult decisions. It is powerful.
Yeah. Well, you're giving back by taking time to join this show or to join other shows. I've heard you've been on a circuit too, and that's dope. And that's like, that is giving back by posting and by being out there and putting yourself out there. That's giving back too. You're sharing stuff and the people are maybe learning inadvertently. They could learn how you're doing it and then model off of that. So it's modeling behavior. So you are giving back already. You're not keeping it all to yourself. So that was one thing that you said to me during our first call that I'll still remember now. And you said, I don't know if I want to share this show with anybody else because then it's like giving away all the secrets. You were like taking notes, but you were still at a firm and you're like, I don't know if I want to share this show with any of my friends here. You're doing the exact opposite of that now. So I don't know if you were saying that facetiously or just to be coy, because I say that kind of stuff all the time, or if it actually was your mindset has shifted.
No, I was genuine about that because I remember listening to an early episode of Sons of CPAs with Jody Grunden, where he goes through hard numbers, where he goes through margin profiles. And I'm like, holy cow, nobody talks about their firms like this. And I'm taking notes like, okay, that's a good margin. This is kind of the range that they're looking out for. And I feel like by equipping others with that type of information, it like you're giving them a weapon, you're giving them a tool to manage more effectively. Yeah. That ultimately is like competition, but my mindset around competition has shifted drastically. And I don't see any of these people as competition because there's so much work to go around. It's just on the individual to message it appropriately.
Well, exactly. But you grew up with that mindset. A lot of us did. I did. I thought that you got to keep things to yourself. I didn't know that sharing gives you more power too. I learned that from Jason Statz. You know, that's what he preached from the beginning. Give everything away. It's not about who holds the information. That's everybody has the information now. It's all out there. All that data and those details are out there if you look for it. But if you continue to give it away and recycle and put that out there, then everybody gets those tools and then everybody wins. Because like you said, we're not all in competition.
Yeah. And like having a core ethos and mission around elevating financial data, it's not like, hey, we're just trying to produce better financial reports for our clients. It's we're trying to help others in our industry up their game. We're trying to help elevate other, you know, softwares and companies that are helping us be better accountants. You know, we're trying to spread that love out so that people who want to learn, who want to lean in, they can look at us and say, hey, like I learned something. I'm able to up my game now because of something that we're doing, which today might not be much, but it will be bigger tomorrow.
It will be bigger tomorrow. Yeah. Well, and why do you have to say that then? It might not be much too. Why do we always have to equate to that?
I think about it just through the lens of how early we are. We're in this, or if you want to call it impact today.
Well, that was what I was leading to, because you don't want to talk about impact. Is that because you think it's still too early?
No, not necessarily. The reason why I struggle with talking about impact is because I feel like a lot of people use impact as a cop-out for growth. So people say, hey, I want to grow. Then the question is, why do you want to grow? And then the answer is, I want to have more impact. And so because I think people have a hard time defining that, I want to be very cognizant of the language that I use around impact, because I struggle with quantifying that myself.
I think people want a cleaner way of defining greed.
Yeah.
They want a nicer way of defining greed. And I want more. I want more. So then they turn it into impact. But then it could turn into something good, especially if they turn it in the right direction. So it's changing your mindset around greed, maybe, or around wanting more, because that's what it used to be about for me. I just wanted more. I wanted to make more. I wanted more of this, more of that. And it was greed. So then I'd called it impact. But at the end of the day, what was driving me was different than what drives me now. And I think that's why there's a mindset shift. It's what you're driving force. Who are you impacting? Because if you turn around and turn the question into, who am I impacting? Am I impacting myself? Then it's greed. Am I impacting others? Then that's real impact. But I guess it's impact either way.
Yeah. And ultimately today, 1 year in, we don't have a tremendous data set to point at and say, hey, we're improving our teams or our accountants' lives based on these three things we're doing. You know, we can materially do that with a variety of clients. And we can also do that now with community because of some community initiatives we've recently taken place. But I think I still want some more data points to be able to quantify that impact better.
quantify it, and that's important, but it's who are you impacting? And I think that is where the rubber meets the road. When you start defining who your ideal client is and how can you impact them, then impact matters. But having an impact just for growth, who are you impacting?
Yeah.
Right. If you don't even have a defined client base, then you're really just impacting. You could define it in different ways, I'm sure. But the impact itself has to be within your ethos, within your mission, and within who you are. And that's got to be part of that. That's, you know, so when you dial back and think about why you got into this in the first place, it should still be the same North Star. It should be the same driver. But who you're impacting is just a matter of who you focus that impact on.
Yeah, it's hard to define it, because when I think about that ethos and I think about accountants living their best lives, I think about my clients living their best lives. How do you measure that? How do you measure somebody's capacity to utilize their time in a better way to feed what fuels them, rather than, hey, we gave you a great financial report that now you can interpret better than you could before? You know, I feel like that there's subjective nature to that impact that is very difficult to measure.
Well, there's numbers. There are numbers that you can measure it, and numbers are the mile markers. That's the milestones to know you're still on your journey and on the way. There is no like set, this is what I want to do. But I think that's our validation too. Like, how much impact can we have is going to be part of our growth. And as you grow, if you're intentional about it, that's going to be measuring your impact. So it can be numbers. It really can, as long as everything else is defined beyond it. I think when I say the greed part, I think that's just for the people that don't have a clear mark on who they're impacting.
Yeah. And when I talk about impact on community, I think, so last week we hosted an event with about 150 people to support a nonprofit that we've partnered with. And we talk about impact. This nonprofit, they shared stories of, so it's a nonprofit called First Descents, and their slogan is healing through adventure. And so they provide these life-giving adventure weeks to individuals, young adults with cancer, with MS, with these diseases, to help them heal through community in nature. And they talked about, I've got goosebumps because I'm thinking about how the impact that creates, but they told several stories of kids that went on their trips and they regained a large sense of their life while going through a very difficult time. And so that type of impact is something that I was literally in tears on my way home from this event, because I was just like, holy cow, like this is measurable. This is palpable now.
And you're using numbers to measure that impact. You said 150 people. If you just said I had an event with a few people or people, but that's measuring the impact. So eventually that works its way into their mission. Obviously you're going there and among other things, you can do other things while you're organizing an event like this and while you're helping do that, because it does ultimately help everybody. You know, you're there on behalf of Full Send. So you're building that for your brand as well, but you're also helping others. So how do you measure that? It's, I guess, however you want to measure it too, if that's the question.
Yeah. And I think ultimately it comes down to just living out our ethos, living out our brand, because you see companies left and right, they post their mission, they post their values, but then you never see it in action. And so to be able to translate that into action is something that's really important to us. And that was just a very physical way to see that come to life last week.
Okay. So let's go back to numbers. You're pretty ambitious. If you were just at about 3, you're going to grow another 700,000 in a year.
Yep, that's the plan.
What does that look like? In 1 year, that is rough on any business.
You're telling me. Yeah, so we should end this year just shy of 500, and then we've got enough in the pipeline and planned for next year. And so right now, the plan is to hire an additional 3 folks next year. And so Stacy and I have been...
3 FTEs, yep. But 5 total with that by the end of the year.
Yeah, so we'll be at 4, including myself, by the end of this year, and then be at 7 by the end of next year. Hopefully at that point in time with a million of total revenue, then probably a 1.2 or 3 million run rate.
Yeah, and that's a healthy number of people to run that much. I mean, that seems like, when I say healthy, I mean, you could probably do that. Most people have more than 7 people. Usually I see like 10, give or take. So
yeah. It's dope. And that's where Stacy and I are really leaning into firm operations, into workflow, into automation, to not just to increase capacity, but to improve client experience and then be able to manage more effectively internally. So we're spending a lot of time on that.
Sure. But you're planning, and tell me about the, so how do you manage the lead flow now if you don't have the capacity, or do you, how do you manage that, your capacity now before you hire
them? Yes. Yeah. So today we're sending proposals to about 25% of the prospects that we're talking to. And so part of that is simply making sure that there's target market alignment, that we're able to serve clients really well. And then we're able to, let's say, put a governor on the speed at which we bring on new clients by extending out the start dates. And so we'll say, hey, we would love to work with you, but we can't start until the third week of October or the next month. Because we know that we won't be able to onboard effectively if we bring you on ahead of time. And so we're just staggering start dates based on our capacity.
That's dope. Yeah. And you've got a practice management system that you use now. Can you share the journey into figuring that out? Because that's very important for any firm. I ran off of Google Sheets for a while until I finally landed on what we use is Carbon, but I want to hear a little bit about that because you're doing some shared stuff with them as well.
Yeah. So when we started, again, I leveraged community. Hey, community, who are you using? How is it working? What would you recommend for my stage? And I initially started by using Carbon. And Carbon was one of those tools where there was so much complexity to a system that wasn't merited for a solopreneur at that point in time that I quickly graduated myself from it because I was like, this is too heavy for what I need today. And then I began building on Teamwork over the last 6 months after Carbon. And then Stacy came on board. We went through a full workflow for management software evaluation. And we got to know the team at Financial Sense really well. And their tool was just perfect for what we needed. It had the right amount of bells and whistles, the right amount of automation. The onboarding was super simple and efficient. And so now we run everything through Financial Sense as our primary firm management software.
Okay. Dope. So this is gets me thinking. I'm going to tease something we got coming up at Accounting High. We're going to do the draft day, or sort of like pick teams for the tournament. And Financial Sense was in the tournament last year. But yeah, we're going to have some draft days and kind of have somebody talk about their decision leading up to which one they picked. And we'll have representatives from each of the major players and talk about why they went the direction they did. So this clip may end up being on that little series in the future.
Dope.
Yeah. So I like that. But I like that decision and the decision-making process for that, because there is not one right direction. Every firm's a snowflake. Everybody's got a different mindset around what they want to achieve out of that. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you need a system to run. That's the backbone of the firm, is what I've always said. Your practice management probably propels and runs everything now and keeps everything in sync and organized. Is that
100%? And that's why before I brought on my first client, I stood up Carbon. It's like, I know I need to manage all this on the back end. And Carbon's a great tool. It just wasn't the right fit for me at that point in time. But today, where we're at with four people,
well, price that point in time too, because that's ultimately going to be a decision-making factor as well. And they're not cheap. Most firms wait to go onto Carbon until they could afford it or justify it.
Mm-hmm. So. Although I did pay a full year's subscription to Ignition before I landing a first client. So I was confident enough in that system, but I did not do
gotta
the same
get
thing with Carbon.
Paid. You got to have something ready to get paid. You got to be able to send the proposals in order to get paid. I would justify that. That's a different story. Another product that our firm would not be able to run without. And that's the fuel. Yeah. That's the heart of the house is Ignition. That's what pumps all the blood everywhere else. Carbon's the backbone. Ignition's that fuel. If we're going to keep going on this analogy, I've got more pieces of the anatomy that we can go after. So let's talk about it. You don't do taxes, right?
Correct.
So you're still using a GL. Which GL do you support or use mostly?
We are more supporters of QuickBooks than we are Xero. About 95% of our clients are on QuickBooks.
And you have a team member going to the fresh pack. So potentially you may be working with another GL, but mostly GL is green, right?
GL is green. GL is green today. And I mean, I love what the FreshBooks team is doing. Like, they bring such phenomenal humanity to a product that is hard to equate. But QuickBooks is our bread and butter from a GL's perspective.
Payroll
Gusto.
Gusto, do you do payroll for your clients? Are you supporting all of it?
We're supporting elements of it for each client. Every client's a little bit different, but Gusto is the primary tool in which we utilize for payroll.
Okay. So that's the blood flowing throughout the body, or the blood vessels. I usually say it's the blue and the red, because the Gusto is the red blood, and then you know the other blue blood cells or veins. You're green, so I have to change that for the metaphor, but usually I use zero in that one. But that's part of the anatomy, right? Your firm is made up of all the different parts that keep it running, and you've got to have a toolkit. You got to have your tools ready, because you can't be switching gears. Every time you got to switch a client, you can't be switching systems too. I think that's a very important of building a practice, is sticking to the tools that you use.
Oh, it's 100% true. And while we would love to have identical matching tech stacks across our entire client base, ultimately clients who we're working with do need some degree of autonomy with their systems. And so we don't mandate a specific tech stack, but if we are in a position to recommend, those are a few of the systems that we would recommend.
Yeah. I mean, you have yours particularly. Yeah. At your firm, you have what you use, and then you have what you can recommend to others. But if they come to you on a system, you're going to work with it depending on how it integrates and all of that, yeah. I'm sure. So I guess let's kind of end with one of the biggest hurdles that you hit in building this, or the point where you questioned, are you going to keep doing it?
The point in the time in which I questioned my sanity.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, you might consider a point of no return, basically, that you definitely are going to keep sending it, but you questioned it.
I committed to doing this for a year, and if I couldn't make it work within a year, then I'm throwing my hat in, and I'm going to do everything in my willpower to make it work. And thankfully we're past that year point now. But I went 8 months without paying myself, and that wasn't easy. And so the point in time, so Stacy and I started conversations in early this year, late last year, and I had 4 or 5 simultaneous conversations going and talking to people about who I could partner with to make this thing work. And it was really difficult to find that person that I really jived with and could bring in and could see this vision through. And I mean, it was hard to identify that, hard to make a decision, hard to like negotiate, figure out what comp looked like and equity. That was tough. I think from a client perspective, when one of my larger clients went through an audit, it was a beating. Mm-hmm. It was brutal. And I'm like, holy cow, my fixed fee didn't really cover this, but I'm going to stick it through because, you know, we committed to doing this work. And so, gosh, that was not fun, but we made it through.
Okay. Now give me the biggest win, like the point where it was just like the biggest celebration you've had in this whole journey.
The biggest celebration to date. I'm going to use two examples. So one, when I signed my first sizable client north of 5K a month, I called my dad and I was literally in tears. And in that conversation with the client, it was in person, they said, hey, we just see that you're doing things differently, and we've got all these fractional firms beating down our door, but we want to work with you. And that was just a moment where I was like, holy cow, people, they can see the vision, they can see it coming to life. And I was moved to tears because of some of those comments that were made. And then if I go to the second point in time where I was moved to tears because of joy, is because of this event that we hosted with over 100 people and partnering with a nonprofit and seeing that impact come to life through the community aspect of what we're doing.
Seeing the impact and being able to feel that. I love that feeling. That's the tingles. That's that joy. And that's why you've been doing everything. And it's the hard work that leads up to it that makes you tingle, that makes you really feel that impact. Because if it wasn't difficult and it wasn't hard and the journey wasn't rough, then it wouldn't feel as good.
Yeah. And there will continue to be as many peaks as there are valleys. And I'm ready for that. We deal with clients that are going through it every single day. And so we need to ride that wave with them. And I know it's coming, but we're going to not let the highs get us too high and the lows get us too low. So we're going to
Yeah. And And that's a very good mindset and good reminder to always have too, because some people can let the highs take you a little too far, and it only creates lows if you do that. I know that from firsthand experience. You ride all those highs out and continue to ride that out, then the lows are just going to be even worse if you're not ready for them. Yeah. Preparing yourself, keeping centered, keeping grounded. One thing that you do on the weekends is you post stuff with you and your family. So you guys, you're an outdoorsy type. You like to, you got all the great outdoors in Denver. Ultimately, you got to choose. Did you get to choose where you lived? Because you moved around a little bit, right?
Yeah, this is the seventh state that I've lived in. And I tried to move here after I graduated college, and there's recession happening, no jobs. But my wife and I ended up here about 7 years ago. She started working for a startup and moved us up, and I joined a new firm once we moved up here, and been here for 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful place. I like the pictures. I like the look of out there. You can always appreciate life when you get those kind of views.
Yeah, man, it's gorgeous. Like it truly is life-giving. And, you know, like our partner in First Ascents, the nonprofit, says, like, healing through adventure. We do that every weekend and try to instill that in our kids.
Ooh, healing through adventure. I love that. And that keeps things exciting too.
Oh, so exciting, man. There's something new around every corner. Like, you go outside, you find a new stick or rock to play with, or a new mountain to look at, or a new lake to play in. Man, it is life-giving.
So my son, when I walk him to school, he gets bored, and I tell him, there's always something new on this walk. So now he gets excited to find the new thing, this thing that he never noticed before. And every time, there's always something that he doesn't notice, or that he didn't notice the last time. Sometimes it's just a sign, or it's just the name of a sign, or it's just somebody's on somebody's front porch or something like that. It's all the little things.
Yeah. And it's that element of wonder and curiosity that's missing largely from our industry. Accountants kind of stick with the same as last year mentality, and the same templates and spreadsheets they've been working in for 20 years. And don't have that knack for curiosity, that knack for adventure within the content or concept of their profession. And we want to bring a little bit more of that to what we're doing here.
Dope. Well, thanks for gracing us with your presence here at Accounting High. You're our head cheerleader. That's what we've called you in the past. Don't be a stranger, because I want to have you come back on and do some other stuff around here too.
So yeah, we'll do a recap on that impact piece and how we're making moves.
VR. Damn it, I can't do the French pronunciation. Roman VR.
So in French, it'd be Romain Didier Villard.
Romain VR.
Villard.
You got to do the ah at the end too.
Romain Didier Villard. It's hard R. Yeah, man. It's good times.
hard R's. Good times. Class dismissed.
From cloud accountancy way back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same, Raleigh is the spot where I edutain, follow me on a path to fulfillment, to trizzes, the yizzes, for us the mindset shift, so you ain't holding yourself back, find software to avoid those simple tasks, we'll define cast and automate tax, cause we hope to educate and lead with impact,
yeah, scope creep team management, your timesheets impeding the relationship,
let's play the accounting game. It's the cloud to the ground, niching, outsourcing, techie tax talking, increasing gross margins, automating back of house and learning blockchain, leadership tips with Coach Nick McKenzie, like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast. Next one we drop, cause you know we don't stop, it's 24/7 on the Accounting High Lot. TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk. Cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod, cause the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
Accounting High. OKR. Accounting High. Accounting High.
Now just toss your hands above your head in despair and wave them all around like you're losing your hair. Yeah, roll up a seat, it's a pleasure to meet. Don't hold your breath, cause Scotty's on the beat. My bank feeds ain't broke, my firm's on autopilot, now I'm on stage. Growth with Accounting High right behind me, and go find your niche, you don't have to remind me. Tapping that, mashing that 10 key. They want a rapper that can balance books, and guess what? He is I and I am him. Slim with a pseudonym. Let's play the accounting game.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
That's okay, rapper.
While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. Share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you.